I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, giving safe space to you independent thinkers out there. We're beholden to no party, no politicians here. We just call them as we see them. Today we're going to have a guest. I'm going to talk to a gentleman from Americans for Freedom and Prosperity, AFP, and they have done some ranking of Mississippi legislators. They come at it and see how what their voting record actually is. I think Mississippi is pretty good about voting for red state. Yeah, we elect a lot of Republicans, solidly red state. I think we kind of fall down on the accountability side of things. It's what I refer to as walking and chewing gum at the same time. We've got the voting down. Oh, we'll send a Republican up to Washington, D.C., or we'll elect him to the state house here. But what they do once they get there is not always consistent with what they campaign on, is it? So I love the idea of any kind of accountability or actually looking at records. So we'll get to that coming up in just a little bit here. I've got my quotes of the day today. This one is from Albert J. Nock, N-O-C-K. He says, it's unfortunately none too well understood that just as the state has no money of its own, so it has no power of its own. What this means is, I've brought this up a lot on this show, just because the government exists doesn't mean they should be able to just do whatever they want to. They're still human beings. The state exercises a lot of authority over people that we don't have over other people. And a lot of people think the government is something special. Oh, but Mike, they're the government. We have to listen to the government. The government should be able to spy on us. I mean, essentially, our governments are able to stalk us. We can't stalk each other. You get into a tad bit of trouble if you become a stalker. If you're eavesdropping on somebody, if you're monitoring, if you're hacking into their emails, you know, you get into a little bit of trouble. But we think, oh, but they're the government. They're special. They're over us. It's a whole other level of society. Well, that's just not quite simply the case. So that's Albert Nock. There's also another one here from Albert Cambus. He says, the welfare of the people in particular has always been the alibi of tyrants. And that kind of leads me straight into what we're going to talk about next. COVID. There was a nurse on the news this morning. Nurse on the news this morning on the national news, obviously. Boy, I got to tell you. Wasn't that right? All you people out there said COVID was over on November 4th, and I told you were wrong for the last 6 months. I think I've got a clear win in that column. There was a nurse on the news this morning. She said, and this is a quote from her. I typed it as I was listening to her because she made me mad. She said, it's like nobody is listening to us. Now, look, all of us have a soft spot for nurses. You do some fantastic work. I've had loved ones in the hospital and been amazed at what nurses do for them. She said, it's like we're trying to put out fires, but people are going around setting fires. And you know, I don't know. I mean, her whole world is COVID, right? Her whole world is inside the hospital walls. She's never missed a paycheck, I would imagine. Matter of fact, she's probably picking up some overtime. But I don't think medical professionals who, and this, she's not alone. I don't want to pick on this woman, although I'm not naming her. And it wasn't even a local woman here to Mississippi. This was on national news. But if she seriously thinks we're not listening, I mean, we cannot escape the endless masking and social distancing advice that is thrown at us multiple times every day, now for 9 months. But my question for her would be, what in the hell do you expect us to do exactly? What would be evidence of us listening? Is it not the probably 95% mask obedience that's going on right now? New report out right now from Denmark came out this morning. Masks don't show any significant effect as far as working, but nobody will talk about that. It will not affect the advice. CDC's got on their website, masks don't work. WHO's got on their website, masks don't work. Clinical physicians have come out and said, before this year, I've never worn a mask around my office, even during the worst of flu seasons. We didn't wear a mask all day, every day, because it don't work. But that doesn't matter. It's not going to stop them from giving that advice. But what does this nurse say? She says, it's not, nobody's listening to us. What exactly would her prescription be? Everybody in the household, pick a room, and you're in that room for 3 months. No going to the no more grocery stores. I don't know how anybody even gets food. We're not there with drone technology. Some human beings got to pack up. They've got to go to the grocery store, pack up the food, and drive it to your home, even in a delivery situation. Does this nurse not want us going to the grocery store, not go to work, not ever see any other friends and relatives, all the elderly people out there that are dying of loneliness, and this is a real thing? Is that what would that indicate that we're listening to the medical authorities? I mean, it's just gotten – it's crazy. This is follows on the heels 2 days ago. Thomas Dobbs said just simple little if people would just take some simple advice and some simple steps, we'd mitigate this crisis. And he's talking about masking and social distancing and staying home, which is what the vast majority of people have been doing now for 9 months. He says it's simple. We're just too dumb to even do the simplest things, essentially, is what it is. And the new theme that's coming out now that's really driving me nuts. If you love your family, you won't see them for the holidays. I don't have the clip. Andrew Cuomo came out and said that. He said, this is how you show during this holiday period, this particular holiday, this is how you show your family that you love them. You don't go see them. You call them up and you say, I love you too much. I love you too much to see you during these holidays. So this is going to be the new call. If you get together with your loved ones and have a holiday celebration where you laugh together, smile together, hug together, and heaven forbid you sing together or something. Or the singing, no singing. We do know that, right? No singing. But if you do that, that's actually an expression in 2020 in America. A family get together now is an expression of just abject apathy towards your family. It's an act of aggression to go to grandma's house and eat with them, even if it's voluntary. When I come back, I want to play a clip. Juan Williams on the Five. This is a Fox News thing. I'm going to talk a little bit about Fox News today, too. Juan Williams, they started getting into an idea on the COVID restrictions. And he made a couple of comparisons that I'd like to break down just a little bit. I find them kind of interesting. So we'll get to that when we come back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Stay with me.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
Back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We've got a guest in for a good chunk of today's show, Stephen Ustroska. He is with Americans for Prosperity, AFP. So, Stephen, I appreciate you joining me today.
Yeah, Mike. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, so we're going to get to the reason you're here is to talk about the legislative scorecard. You guys actually kind of rank people and take a look at how their voting record has shaped up. And this scorecard is for what period of time? Was it?
That's for this session, for the 2020 session of this year.
Right.
So we had an extended session this year, the longest in state history, so it made it fun to do a scorecard. But, yeah, this is just for this year, and then, of course, next year we'll do one, you know, come out about the same time next year for the 2021. So.
Right. Well, I love it. I say we do a really good job in Mississippi of voting. You know, we're a solid red state and all that stuff. The accountability side seems to be a little lacking when it comes to, I don't know as much about local, but national politicians for sure. But anyway, so we'll get to that scorecard in just a minute. I wanted to play this clip. I didn't even advance it. We started getting talking during the break. I wanted to play this clip. We're talking about the COVID restrictions and stuff. And yesterday, I just happened to see this clip last night. on The 5 on Fox News, and they were discussing the COVID restrictions. I love, have you seen the video, the stuff about Gavin Newsom out in California getting busted going out to eat? Tucker Carlson did a brutal takedown. It was genius. He did a great takedown with him last night. So it's this idea. I mean, really, I think people are really getting upset about this no Thanksgiving, already no Christmas. You know, it's just getting too much for a lot of people who think this is overblown.
Yeah, the best thing I've seen about that is back to Orwell. You know, some animals are more equal than others.
Yeah, it certainly is taking shape around here. Anyway, this is what – so they're talking about the – and, you know, The 5 is a show on Fox News, and essentially you have – they've got Kennedy on this one, so she's more libertarian like me. Then you've got three conservatives, and then you've got the one liberal who is Juan Williams. So he's always got his side. So they're talking about the lockdowns, no gyms, all these other things that are happening. Well, Juan Williams tries to draw some comparisons that I thought were worth talking about. Let's get this clip going here.
Sorry, Greg. I apologize.
Right, Juan, last word to you.
Well, I understand that
the only way to get consulting.
YouTube does this too. You know, if you advance a video too far, YouTube will just try to throw an ad at you. I'm going to skip this thing. I'm not going to pay YouTube any money.
Don't like to have the government telling them what to do.
Hear, hear.
Right? No one likes that, right? Libertarian over here. But on the other hand, I think that there comes a point where individual actions impact the safety of us all. And, you know, and the easiest example would be speeding. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't drive your car as fast as you might want to because that impacts other people. You could crash into other people, hurt yourself, kill people and the like. These days, you're not allowed to smoke indoors. You know, certainly can't smoke on an airplane. That's, again, because of us Americans as a family looking out for each other. And I think in this way, we have to start to think more openly about why these regulations are in place. It's not about Democrats. Today, we had, I think it's three or four, maybe more, Republican governors say, I'm now going to impose some limits, whether it's mask or other limits in terms of gatherings. So you're seeing now, I think, a little bit moving away from the Trump steel hand. Oh, no, we're not having a lockdown. Now I think you see Republican governors saying, listen, the reason we're doing this is not just by fiat, but because we have such a tremendous increase in the rate of infection.
All right. So he goes on a little bit. So I wanted to talk about this because I thought it was interesting. I would imagine a lot of people would listen to that and go, well, that's kind of true. We do have these laws in there. Here's the difference I see in his speeding example. If you are speeding down a road over the posted speed limit, you are visibly doing something that we have, I guess, as a society, or we have set rules on the roads, that you are doing something that is potentially dangerous. I know that engineers actually craft roads sometimes for, you know, turns have got a certain speed limit. You're visibly doing something. With coronavirus, you're not, the restrictions, the masks, you can't gather in your own home. I mean, they're saying now, if you test negative one day, you're still a biological threat the next day. You can't, testing on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, by Thursday, you could be a super spreader. I mean, they're saying these words. And the difference between it is like saying you can't get on the road because you have the potential of speeding, or we need to issue you a summons because you're going the speed limit, but you might, if we don't keep our eye on you, you may go over the speed limit at some point. That's the comparison I would make, because what we're doing is not, we're not just quarantining the sick and making the sick. We are putting these across everybody, negative, positive, symptomatic, or asymptomatic. It doesn't matter. Everybody abides by the same rules. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Yeah, I mean, you know, we can't just tell everybody indefinitely, you got to stay at home. Every time you leave your house, there's a risk for something.
Right.
You know, whether it's COVID now, whether it's the flu, you know, we're back in flu season, but it seems like everybody's putting that to the side right now. We're not going to worry about flu this year. We're going to, you know, worry about COVID. But no, I'm right there with you. You know, why are we going to force everybody to play along with those that may be sick or because of this, you know, coronavirus? So, yeah, I mean, great example.
Yeah. And then you get to the smoking. I wanted to say something else about speeding, too, that I found kind of interesting in my own brain. We'll see if it is interesting. Speeding and driving really fast in a car is actually not in and of itself illegal. And I'll give this example. So if you go on the interstate, they tell you can't go over 70. To most of us, that means if you stay under 79, you should be okay. But, you know, they tell us 70. but you are able to drive in a car at 220 miles an hour if you get with another group of people who voluntarily also want to drive around in a circle at 220 miles an hour. So it's not the act of speeding. It's the act of saying, well, obviously driving around these racetracks when race car drivers do it, that's dangerous. People die doing that, horrible injuries. And each one of those drivers is a threat to somebody else on the track. But they've all voluntarily said, this is a competition. We're willing to accept the risk. I compare this to a Thanksgiving dinner. If everybody voluntarily says, hey, we know there's this bug out there. Everybody's tested positive, but somebody could have picked it up when they were picking up the rolls at the store today. We're all willing to accept this risk. We think we were mitigating it, and we just want to get together and see each other. To me, that's like the race car drivers. I mean, it's not, that's by itself, that's not a threat.
Yeah, that's right. And you and I were talking about in the break that back to the smoking thing. You know, there's some counties in Mississippi that if you're in the county, you can smoke indoors, but you can only drink beer. You know, you can't have heavy alcohol. But then in the city limits, you can have liquor, but no smoking indoors. So
right.
Same thing. You're mitigating the risk. Whatever you want to do. You know, if you want to smoke, go to a bar that smokes.
Well, I think conservatives were very short-sighted when they really jumped on the bandwagon of I had a tense email exchange with a Ridgeland alderman that was a Republican that I knew when he voted to ban smoking in restaurants. And I said, you know, these are private property owners. And the free market would have taken care of smoking in the restaurants so quick. It was already happening.
Sure.
But they wanted to virtue signal to their people that, hey, a lot of people, I don't like to go into a smoky restaurant. It stinks. It's not good for it. There's all kinds of reasons. So a bunch of restaurants would have said, hey, come on over to us. We're no smoking. But they couldn't let it go. And I hope conservatives can see a little bit of a teachable moment here that says, you see what happens? Now you've given the government authority to tell a gym whether or not it can or can't open, a restaurant, how many people it can have in it. I mean, to me, that smoking thing was kind of the first thing that said private business just doing a lawful activity. Suddenly they put all these constraints on it. Everybody cheered for the smoking thing. They're not laughing and cheering so much now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so I saw some new restrictions out of New York coming out. They're going to restrict gyms back to 33% capacity. And so, you know, how's a business owner? How are you expected to your business to thrive on 33%?
You just can't.
But the government, though,
right?
You know, they need 100%.
Right.
You know, they're not cutting their expenses back to 33% in this hard economic time.
Well, they're all essential.
Yeah.
your health and enjoyment of your life, that's they can cut that and let that go, but the government must always continue to function.
Right, and that's why, you know, I saw New York again, within the next 3 years, their deficit's going to take them up to, I think, $65 billion. But Cuomo's getting a raise this year. You know,
my gosh.
Legislature's allowed him to get a $25,000 raise, so he'll get that. But, that deficit, you know, that's, deficit goes into debt.
Yeah.
So $65 billion New York's looking at, how do they expect to get that money back? If they're not letting their businesses work, if people can't work,
right.
Revenue's not coming to the state because nobody's doing anything, how do they expect to pay for that?
That nurse this morning saying, I don't know, it just feels like people aren't listening to us. I mean, I think that just tunes out every other consideration that most normal people have in their lives, which is things like, I really need to go to work. My kids really need to get out of the house. My kids really need to get educated. My kids, you know, I need to be able to earn a living. I mean, it's like that nurse tunes all of that out and says, if you don't go by the letter of this quarantine, self-imposed quarantine, then you're doing something horrible for our society. It's insane.
Yep. Yeah, I saw out in California, one of the school districts said that they're closing again and won't reopen until at least April. Just in time, I guess, to get out in May, but that'd be almost a full year, except for a few weeks in between that they've opened, so that, you know, kids out there, you know, haven't been to school in a year.
What state was that?
That was California.
Do you know how many school-age children have died in California from coronavirus since this started?
No.
Two. Yeah. I mean, this is the insanity we're seeing right now, and it is during my buffer music, I've got the Will Ferrell quote from Zoolander where he goes, is anybody else noticing this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I mean, that's where we are right now. And it's just relentless. I mean, again, this was Juan Williams. They were talking about it last night. The nurse on TV today, Thomas Dobbs yesterday. Thomas Dobbs came out with some chart. Did you see this? Where he made a percentage for every large gathering, like churches were 36% of the pie, and then schools were 14% of the pie. I'm not sure exactly what that meant. I didn't really know did you see this?
No.
I don't know what his point of this was, but it was basically kind of this scolding of every single activity. And I guess the idea was, here's where our problem is. Look at the 36% of people that are going to church. You know, they're the problem. And then you kids who are going to school, you're the problem. And again, a state of the size of California has had two deaths. I was thinking about it this morning, too. I have not heard the stories, and maybe I've missed them, of the teachers that have just been dropping dead in the streets. Because, boy, when states were wanting to get their kids back in schools, teachers were having a conniption fit. I take care of my elderly mother. You can't put all these germy kids in front of me all day. I'm going to kill my, you know, they're going to kill my grandma, that kind of thing. But it doesn't seem like there's been a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, you know, so Americans for Prosperity, we want to make sure everybody's doing everything safe. But that doesn't come down to government mandate.
Right.
We want everybody to make sure they're doing things safe. They're doing everything that they can to make sure that, you know, the virus is real. It's out there. But if we shut down our economy, we have bigger problems. You know, you got to let people do what they know is best for themselves, how they can protect themselves, how they can protect the elderly who are, you know, more at risk for the virus. So, you know, we believe in the individual.
Right. And I mean, we are adults, and some people in this society are swifter than others and make better decisions along the way. I mean, if I had a nickel for every bad decision I've made over my life, but I learned from it, I moved on, but I've never wanted. Why didn't the government stop me from making that stupid mistake? That's never been a concern of mine. All right. Well, we're going to move on. We're going to get back and talk about the scorecard that you did for the Mississippi legislature. I think this is interesting. What would you say is the sense of the overall scoring? Are we really zeroing in on perfection when it comes to lawmaking in Mississippi?
Yeah. So the short of it is the average score for our House of Representatives was a 74, and the average score was a 71 percentage on our bills that we scored. So
my son did better than that in calculus, and he struggled. Yeah, that's not encouraging.
Yep.
All right.
So
well,
that's what we got.
All right. Well, we'll look at it. Like I say, I think it's good to have some accountability on the other side. You vote them in, you can keep the state as red as you want, but are you actually getting any kind of free market conservative government? That's the question. All right. We'll be right back. Y'all stay with us.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we've got with us today Stephen Utroska. I'm saying your name?
That's right.
Okay, all right. Talk to you a lot, but you don't say somebody's last name out loud. All right, so tell us a little bit about your group, what you do just in general, and then let's get to this
sure.
Legislative scorecard.
Yes, I'm the state director for Americans for Prosperity, Mississippi. We're part of a national organization. We have 35 state chapters, Mississippi being one of those. We've had our chapter here for about 5 years now. And so we're pretty well set up here and starting, you know, looking forward to continuing the relationships we have here in Mississippi. But our national group also works in D.C., so we do both state and federal policy work. But really, to the core of it, we're a grassroots organization. We're dedicated to really the principles that break barriers for individuals so that our society can move really more towards a system of mutual benefit. And you know, it's really fancy words to say we believe in the individual. We believe in individual liberty. We believe that it's not the government's position to tell you how to live your life, but you should be able to make those decisions on your own. Like you said earlier, make mistakes on your own if that happens. You know, learn from your own mistakes. But we work with people from all walks of life, We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, so we're not one-sided. We work across the aisle, and here in Jackson, we work with Republicans and Democrats on different policy issues. But our organization exists really to recruit, educate, and mobilize citizens. So we're a grassroots organization. We want to get citizens motivated and encouraged to get active in key policy issues that we're interested in, and most of those come back to the individual liberty of the people of Mississippi.
Yeah.
So that's our goal, is to transform this institution of government that we have back to the people. So our scorecard that we're here today to talk about, it's real simple. The reason for our scorecard is to keep our elected officials accountable, and to give people who aren't involved in policy, who don't know anything, give them a very short, very brief description of some of these bills that we looked at, that we scored, let them know what they mean and why we stand for them or against them, and then let them make those decisions for their legislators.
Yeah, and I think, a tool like that, I think, is great. I look, FreedomWorks does one on the national level, and I think those things are really very instructive, because to try to judge a politician just by the letter behind their name, or by some kind of a campaign rhetoric, or a website. It's always funny to me when you go to someone's website, particularly on the national level. And most of what I do here is national. I'm glad to have you coming in to do some more local stuff, because it's where it matters. But it's funny, you'll see on Cindy Hyde Smith's page that she's dedicated to a fiscal responsibility and a balanced budget. Those kinds of things. So you really need to look at what their actual actions are and how they actually vote.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, and so yesterday I went to an event, and the speaker there said, the most conservative your legislator will ever be is 5 minutes before he swears in.
Right.
And then once they swear in, and I'll tell you, it's a difficult, you get in there, you want to change the world, you want to make sure you stay with your conservative beliefs. And you get in there, and there's just as much of a swamp here in Jackson as there is in D.C. You get in there, and it's difficult. It's hard to stay to your principles. So that's part of why we do the scorecard, is to let constituents know how to help keep your legislator accountable. Reach out to them, let them know you saw this scorecard, you saw what they voted on. And a lot of legislators bank on their constituents not knowing
how they vote. Yeah, you would know, who has time to sit there and track every single bill? Every year there may be two bills that go through the legislature that really demand any kind of public awareness. They become, the flag. I mean, we know what happened with the flag, because it was such a big issue. But the rest of the time, nobody's got time to keep up with this. So your scorecard kind of puts it right out there for people to look at the score of their guy and then trace it back through the votes in about 10 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. And so, back when the flag happened, every legislator that I've talked to, and when I say legislator, House member or Senate member, you could talk to them, they'd say they had gotten thousands of emails to their official email address about the flag. And, on a normal bill, if they get one or two,
that's
big.
Right.
So if they get one or two emails that people are saying, hey, we think you should vote this way, or how are you going to vote this way, or explain this bill to me, or whatever, that's a lot. But when something like the flag vote came out, they were getting thousands, it swamped anything else. So while that was important to many Mississippians, the flag, there's a lot of other important policies that were going on at the same time
that affect our lives on a daily basis.
On a daily basis, that got just completely pushed to the side. So
do you do anything like an alert, a vote's coming up, to give people a heads up before a vote takes place so they can weigh in with somebody?
Yeah, so we do. So to both all the legislators, when a vote comes up, we alert them. So we use what we call key vote alerts. And so all of the bills, so back, real quick, back to the scorecard, we scored 25 votes in the House and 30 in the Senate. So now some of those cross over because they went to both chambers. Some of them may have come up in one chamber, but either didn't make it to a floor vote of the other one, or vice versa. So those are the bills we scored. But every one of those bills we were either actively engaged in under the dome in Jackson. And most of those we sent out specific key vote alerts to our legislators to let them know that that's something that we want them to vote on this way. And then to our activists, we let them know what bills we're working on, what it looks like, why we believe one way or the other on those bills, if we're supporting it or opposing it. And so we put all that out there because that's, again, we're a grassroots organization. We want our activists to get involved to keep the legislators accountable. So to let them know, hey, vote on it this way.
Well, do you think that works? They're responsive. You know, you talk about the flag and thousands of emails and regular Bill 2 emails. So do 20 emails on one side of an issue to somebody voting, does that actually matter to them? Or do you, are there other pressures on them from another side that would counteract that?
Yeah, so there's plenty of lobbyists in Jackson that are talking to legislators, telling them how they should vote one way or another. But nothing moves a legislator to make a vote more than getting five people from his district to either call him or email him and say, we think you should vote this way.
That's good news.
I mean, as low as five people, that's, you know, if he gets five emails, he knows something big's happening.
I think that's fantastic news. I mean, it means you actually may have a voice somewhere in government, because most people don't feel like we really have any kind of a voice, you know, any we're asked to vote every 2, 4, 6 years, and then we just wait and do it again, but we don't get to play during
that's right.
the course.
Yeah. And so, you know, some of the issues that we looked at, and specifically on this scorecard, you know, our principles never change, and that's what we want. We want principled legislators, principled activists, principled, you know, constituents and you know, voters in Mississippi to stick to their principles. And so the issues that we looked at this year, though, for this scorecard were unsustainable government and spending and debt, you know, rigged economy, overbearing regulations that prevent people from working or starting a business, and government restrictions that that prevent innovation, specifically in healthcare right now, because that's been such a big topic this year with COVID coming out as healthcare. So, you know, we looked at those issues. Our scorecard, when it came out, and you know, a lot of people saw the scores and what they looked like, they were wondering, you know, how did you weight this? You know, how did it work? And it's listed in our scorecard. So our scorecard, you can go to scorecardms.com and download it there to look at. It's a PDF you can download. But if you go on there, it has listed out. There's a narrative at the very beginning that tells how we scored it. But we don't weight any bills more than others. They all weight the same. So 25 in the House, 30 in the Senate. They're all weighted, you know, exactly the same. They get basically, you know, 1.4 against them if they vote it. So if we support the bill, you know, they voted for it, then, you know, they get a point. If we oppose it and they voted against it, they get a point. And then, you know, it's just averaged out. The percentage comes from that. The only thing we did different this year than we've done in previous years are this year we decided we were going to give some bonus points. So for chairmen that passed our bills, they got a bonus point. And for primary sponsors, got half a bonus point. And so that really just, you know, lets them know that, hey, this is an important bill. You know, without chairman, without sponsors, we never get any bills out. And so we gave bonus points for those, but otherwise it's just a straight scoring. So that's how the scorecard went, and it fell how it was. Like I said earlier, you know, we had an average of about 74.
How is that compared to previous years? Is it better or worse?
Yeah, so because we changed some of the metrics the way we did things this year, it's hard to compare this scorecard to other scorecards, but it's about average from what we've seen.
So we got some work to do then.
Yep, we still have a lot of work to do. So there's 174 legislators total, 122 in the House, 52 in the Senate. And out of 174, we had 9 that got A's.
Yeah, well, we should highlight those. We need to take a break, but why don't we come back and talk about some heroes that are actually out there for individuals and liberty and free markets and crazy things like that that, man, Mississippi needs more of. We're talking to Stephen Utroska here. He's from Americans for Prosperity, and they've put out a scorecard on the Mississippi legislature. We're going to talk about the hometown heroes, the people that are doing it right. And I do encourage you, you said that was scorecardms.com.
That's right, yeah. And actually, we bought the domain of msscorecard.com, too. So if you get that mixed up, msscorecard.com or scorecardms.com.
Very smart, very smart. All right, we'll get to the hometown heroes when we come back. Stay with us. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we're back. We're talking to Stephen Utroska here from Americans for Prosperity about the legislative scorecard here in Mississippi. So, all right, well, let's get to some of the people that are doing it right. We might as well praise them. Are we going to bash the people that did really bad, or are we just going to let them be on the scorecard in shame and let people find them?
Yes, we'll let people find them in shame. One thing I will say that we did this year is, before I go into talking about our champions, our nine policy champions that we had, for all of our nine champions, we sent out mailers to their district, to all their constituents, to let them know how much we appreciated their help in letting, you know, Mississippians choose for themselves. You know, these are bills that, again, you know, go back to individual liberty. So we you know, sent out mailers to those guys, and we appreciated that. I have been telling legislators that I've talked to that this time next year, we'll also be sending mailers out to our F districts to let their constituents know.
So the carrot and the stick.
So the carrot and the stick next year. So, yeah, so, but, yeah, our champions, we had two champions in the Senate. And both of these senators are ones that, you know, I work closely with. They're well-known names. You know, the people that have been in the Liberty Movement in Mississippi will know these. But Chris McDaniel and Melody Sojourner.
Yeah.
So no surprise there, I think, to most people that know them, that they are, you know, certainly champions for individual liberty.
Well, if we were too short-sighted to send Chris McDaniel to Washington, D.C., at least he's still doing something here in the state for us.
That's right, yeah. Still a fantastic senator representing Jones County, so we appreciate him. And then Melanie Sojourner's over in Natchez. But in the House, we had seven members, and I've got these in alphabetical order, so no other order than that. But Nick Bain, Joel Baumgar, Randy Boyd, Chris Brown, Dana Criswell, Steve Hopkins, and Kevin Horan. And you know, several of those names, probably a lot of the listeners know who they are, especially the DeSoto guys. They like to stir things up sometimes. But, yeah, so those are A's in the House. Glad for those guys. And again, these, you know, these guys stepped up. I mean, we were proud to have them as our champions, glad that they would step up and take the votes, and sometimes hard votes against the machine.
Yeah.
You know, some of these bills that we were supporting – didn't make it very far, you know, because they just didn't have the machine behind them. But these guys, you know, they stuck to their principles. They didn't care that it wasn't going to pass, and they voted for it anyway.
So can you tell us kind of like some of the bills? What are the kinds of things that AFP is excited about and encourages people to carry?
Yeah, so some of the bills this year that we supported, that we wanted to see passed, the Occupational Licensing Review Commission, that was passed a couple years ago. There was a new bill this year that kind of beefed that up, gave them a little more power. And so we supported that, and it did eventually pass. We're glad to see that.
And we'll tell us what that means exactly.
So the Occupational Licensing Review Commission was put in a couple years ago, and basically that gives it was a created commission. It gives the commission the opportunity to go back and look at boards in Mississippi. So I forgot how many boards we have in Mississippi. I mean, an unreal amount of boards. Everything requires a professional licensure nowadays, you know, anywhere from
permission to get into a profession.
That's right. So, yeah, right. You know, I mean, some of the professions that you would expect to have licensure, medical professionals, you know, engineers, things like that. I mean, you know, it's easy for people to understand why they would need, you know, some kind of vetting, you know, by somebody, but, you know, certainly they have licenses. But then, you know, there's other ones like
hair braiding.
That's one, yeah. that.
And that was like, wasn't that like 300 hours or something of training you had to pay for and undertake to be a hair braider?
That's right. And so, you know, Mississippi Justice Institute, they have taken on several of those cases. One right now is eyebrow threading. You know, eyebrow threading doesn't use any chemicals or anything. They just use thread. It's a kind of a, you know, an Eastern tradition. You know, we're not used to it here in the U.S., but the cosmetology board was telling her she had to go, you know, go get, you know, basically a year and a half of classes it would take her to get this license for something they don't even teach. They don't teach eyebrow threading. So that's what this commission is to do. They look and review at some of these licenses and some of the boards. And
people should always remember, too, every time you have these bureaucracies set up and you force people to go into these trainings and pay for all of these hours of stuff, it raises the price of everything, too. You end up with, you know, an eyebrow threader. If you can figure out how to do that, learn it on a skill and go do it and open up a shop, that's a pretty low friction way to get into something. It makes for a cheap service. So you start stacking these things on there. I mean, the people who have to go through that, they pass those costs on to consumers.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. So some of the other bills we looked at, a Forum Act is what's called, the Forming Open and Robust University Minds. It's basically a free speech act for college campuses. I think that the free speech we have on college campuses in Mississippi is pretty good. I think it could be better, so that's what this did.
Have we had a problem with cancel culture here and the major universities in Mississippi?
I think more than what we want to see.
Yeah.
So we certainly have that. But another bill was Learn to Earn Act. That just allowed high school students to start getting some co-op experience with companies. So it gave them high school credit for going out and working in the workplace so they get experience. And so if they decide not to go into a university or a community college after that, they have some of that experience that they can go in either into a trade school or directly into, you know, the working environment. We had two different regulatory reduction programs that we looked at. One had multiple state agencies in it. One had just one state agency in it. And it basically said, hey, look at the regulatory burden that you're putting on people now and see if you can reduce that. See if there's old regulations that you don't actually enforce now that you could just cut out. You know, we have like 117,000 regulations on the books in Mississippi, 117,000.
Good Lord.
And so there's nobody, no individual, somebody wanting to start a business, you know, there's no way they can understand every one of those and know that as they're starting a business to make sure they're not breaking some regulation or law that's going to prevent them from working.
And what would you say is, I mean, a lot of those regulations are done by the industry themselves to keep competitors from coming in. I mean, they try to make some fields try to make it difficult to come in because they don't want the competition.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And again, you know, like I said, there's a lot of lobbyists in Jackson, and, you know, those lobbyists, you know, a good majority of them represent special interests, you know, companies or industries that are already in the market. You know,
yeah.
So if they
right.
can, if they can create regulations that keep competitors out,
absolutely. Yeah.
Then it's only to their benefit. So that's what we see. Some of the bills that we opposed, so those were all bills we were supporting. A couple of bills that we opposed was there were a few bills that increased the size of government, you know, created new departments, new divisions, new agencies, a tourism department that we opposed. There was, you know, back about industries trying to keep more people out. The Realtors Association was heavily supporting a bill that increases the requirements to become a broker. So, you know, they wanted to increase it from 1 year to 3 years. We were opposed to that because it, you know, they're just preventing more competition from
right.
coming in. We opposed that. In the end, it did pass, but we were able to kind of get it knocked down so that you can still become a broker. 1 year, you just can't supervise until you have that 3 years experience.
Yeah, I tell you what, we're about to be up against the end of the hour, so I want to finish that, though. I definitely want to go through those bills. And next hour, we want to talk about, too, Tate Reeves talking about getting rid of the state income tax.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'd like to hear the details on that. I purposely haven't even read about it. I'm going to let you inform us all.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back. Y'all stay with us.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Today in the studio, we got with us Stephen Utroska, and we're talking with him. He's from Americans for Prosperity, AFP. We're talking about the scorecard, the legislative scorecard here in Mississippi, and if people are voting for things like individual freedom and free market ideas. So we're talking about that, and then we're going to get into in a second. I want to hear about Tate Reeves. Put out a proposal just 2 days ago, I guess, where he said he wants to eliminate the state income tax. That certainly made my ears perk up. Anybody who listens to the show knows I'm not a fan of taxation at all, so I want to hear about that. But finish up on any bills that you thought were good or bad that you worked on over the course of the last legislative session.
Sure, yeah. So one of the last bills I'll mention that we supported was the Hemp Cultivation Act. And, you know, we have been trying to get, you know, hemp has been federally legal for, you know, a number of years now, and we've been trying to get it state legal. And after a more difficult fight than it should have been.
Why is that difficult? This is the question to us little people out here who just don't understand exactly what the pressures that go on in legislature and, like, the lobbyists and, You know, sometimes you just see things. I can't imagine who opposes these things. Why has that been hard to get through?
Yeah, you know, I think the issue with hemp is that everybody just associates hemp as being because it is similar to the marijuana plant.
The leaves look alike, yeah.
Looks similar. You know, it doesn't have the THC content that marijuana does. So, and there's, I mean, you know, hemp, look at, you know, they call marijuana a weed because it is. It's a weed, you know, or they call it weed. But, you know, a hemp plant is similar to the marijuana plant. It grows very fast. They can cultivate it. They can make a lot of things out of it. You know, I mean, back in the day, everybody used to have their, you know, hemp necklaces that they'd make out of the rope from hemp. But
hemp,
I mean,
rope.
That's right. They can do rope, you know, paper. I mean, it's a plant that they can make many textiles out of, and it grows really quick. You know, in Mississippi, I'm not that involved in it to know, you know, how many growing seasons they can have here in Mississippi, but I know in other states they have multiple growing seasons in one year that they can grow this. So, you know, I don't think that it's taken off that much in the U.S. yet because of, you know, so many years of regulations against it. But
right.
I think as we look into the near future, I think that this could become a textile material that will, you know, swamp a lot of other things like, you know, cotton and paper.
So has that been some of the pushback or cotton farmers pushing back against it? I've heard law enforcement say we don't want even hemp because our officers can't tell the difference between hemp and regular marijuana, but I don't know why anybody be toting around a bunch of hemp. It's not like you can smoke it or anything. That's not what hemp's used for.
Right, that's right. Yeah, I think that's most of the pushback is just the perception that it looks like marijuana. And so for law enforcement, for you know, if you have a big hemp field, you know, if you're growing a lot of hemp, you know, there's the opportunity, I guess, that somebody could grow marijuana in the middle of it.
Sneak a plant
there, and it'd be difficult, but you know, I can tell you most of the farmers I know have absolutely no reason to want to grow marijuana in the middle of their cultivation field. So, but it did pass, and so we're glad it, you know, so it actually died. We brought it back, and then it eventually passed. And what I like to, you know, say about bills is it's not dead until it's dead. So, you know, things die, we can bring them back. And so that one we were able to bring back, and we passed it. But you know, I'd say the biggest bill that we were opposed to was the bond bill. You know, we had a bond bill just basically means that we're borrowing money.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of things included in this bond bill. They'd like to throw everything in together. But this bond bill this year added $292 million to our debt load.
What is the financial state of the state of Mississippi?
You know, it depends on who you ask. You know, we do have a rainy day fund, and we've spent some of that now, but I think on paper, it actually looks good versus our revenue in, revenue out, but we just spend a ton of money and take a lot of taxes that we don't need to take. And the state of Mississippi takes a lot of tax money, and they spend a lot of tax money. And so, you know, back to the other point that we're looking at now, Governor Reeves and both the Speaker of the House and Governor Reeves have indicated their vision of Mississippi not having an income tax in Mississippi. We certainly support that. I mean, we would love Americans for Prosperity. We would love to see an elimination of the state income tax. To me, taxing someone's labor is about, you know, one of the most egregious taxes you can have.
Yes, amen.
So, you know, how does that look? You know, what has been proposed? The Speaker of the House, I think, has a plan, but hasn't put anything out yet. He has talked about it. He's been verbal about that.
Is this Tate and the Speaker have the same plan?
No. So we haven't seen, or I haven't. I'm not saying there's not one out there, but I haven't seen a plan from the Speaker. But he's verbally said that he supports that. Reeves, like you mentioned, he in his speech the other day said that he supported that, and then did put out some printed material to say kind of what that would look like. Not a full-on plan, so we don't know all the details of it. But one thing I think is important that some other states have talked about and Governor Reeves mentioned is that with these proposed tax cuts, there would be revenue triggers with it. And so I think the revenue triggers can be a good thing, but they can also be a very bad thing. And there's a lot of states that have done tax cuts that have revenue triggers in them.
Explain revenue
trigger. And so, so what that means is what they'll do is they'll pass this bill and say, hey, we're eliminating state income taxes. Reeves' bill would do it over 10 years, which is, you know, is a pretty stretched out time frame.
I mean, it's a tax rate of 5%, isn't it? Isn't the top tax rate Mississippi
State
tax is 5%? So
that's right. Yeah. So we have progressive tax. There's a 3%, 4%, 5% currently. The 3% is actually already in law to go away. So it'll be gone by 2022. The 3% will still have the 4% and 5% brackets in our tax code. But yeah, so it stretched it out over 10 years is you know, what the governor is proposing. And then the revenue trigger, what that means is if we make the first step of the tax cut, then we have to meet revenue goals in order to continue going through the tax cut. So if after the say, and there's other ways they could do it, but what I believe what we'll see in his plan as he comes out further with it is that say we make that first step, and if we haven't made up that revenue that's coming into tax revenue in the state, if we haven't made that up by the end of the first year, well, we won't make it into the second year of the tax cut. So we got 10 years to make the cut. And at 5%, you're talking about, you know, that seemingly 0.5% per year.
Well, what would drive the revenue? Is it the idea that business activity would pick up and that, I mean, the whole idea that tax cuts pay for themselves? Or, because my first thing when I heard we're going to abolish the state income tax, my first thought was, oh, that's a great idea. And then my second thought about a nanosecond later was, where are they going to make it up?
Right. And so that's the issue. And that's a real big issue, I think, using revenue triggers is I think what we'll see at the same time is if they pass a bill this year, I think coinciding with this 10-year plan, they'll pass a gas tax increase.
Right.
They'll pass, you know, maybe a increase the state sales tax.
Right.
So they'll pass these other taxes to say, hey, that's what we're going to make up for with. You know, so the state, you know, it would surprise me if they have plans to actually reduce spending.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, so because that's the only other way they do it. And if he has not announced, so in his proposals coming up, did he announce any spending?
Yeah, you know, I think in the proposals that he's made so far, there are you know, the idea that hey, we would cut spending, you know, cut out some of this waste, and that's, you know, where we would make up.
Is it as generic as that? Hey,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. So we haven't seen any real plans about what that may look like. But again, you know, if we go with this revenue trigger, if they increase taxes on one front, you know, to be able to make up for the decrease they've made, you know, we're not cutting spending, so the amount of spending stays the same.
Right. Well, that's Trump's tax cuts, too. I mean, it's tax cuts everywhere that are not accompanied with any level of reform of government or spending cuts, or really a lot of cases on the federal level. They're basically, we're just getting loans from our great-grandchildren.
Right.
You know.
Right. So, I mean, you know, when you look at it, if it was, you know, I'm not a big fan of tax swaps because usually if the government wants to do a tax swap, it's because it's to their benefit,
right,
not to
yeah.
ours.
The house always wins.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, if it was a true equal tax swap, if they said, hey, we're increasing tax on gas, we're increasing the sales tax, but we're decreasing or we're, you know, eliminating completely the income tax, but it's going to be 100%, you know, even tax swap. I think as far as Liberty folks are concerned, that's a win because, you know, you're not taxing someone's labor because that's the most egregious tax we can have. So is it a win? Yes, it would be. How big of a win would it be? You know, how much would it drive our economy? I think it would. I think people would drive, you know, come into the state. I think we'd bring people into the state. I think we'd bring businesses into the state.
Well, that's what's so frustrating because that's a pretty simple plan. Here's the plan. You get rid of the income tax. You spur some economic activity. You unleash some more spending with your people. You attract other businesses to the state. And you just cut some damn spending so that it doesn't hurt your state budget so much. It seems very simple. Why don't they do the cutting side?
Yeah, well, and we have to be, from my perspective, we got to be careful about if we cut the income tax, we don't want to spend more money to try to, you know, more tax dollars to try to incentivize people in. You know, why don't we, instead of doing that, we continue to decrease regulations. So if we can decrease regulations on professional licensure, if we can decrease regulations and cut red tape on small businesses starting up in Mississippi, and we cut the individual income tax, you know, let's cut regulations, cut spending, and drive people into Mississippi because it's a prosperous place to be able to set up a business
yes.
and raise your family.
Yes.
Not, hey, well, now that, you know, we've cut individual income tax, we're starting to draw people in, our revenues are higher, let's spend more of that money to draw more people in. You know, instead of spending more money to draw people in, why don't we just cut regulations that will draw more people in? You know, it's the flow of the free market. People are going to go less resistance if we have less regulations on starting small businesses, allowing small businesses to continue to work, cutting professional licensure, looking at universal licensure that will allow people who have licenses in other states when they move into Mississippi, you know, to be able to an easy process to change those over to licenses here. I mean, those are all things that would drive people and businesses into Mississippi without us having to spend more tax dollars.
Right. Well, I mean, Mississippi just should be almost a blank slate. I mean, we've been at 50 for so long. I mean, we've got so it just feels like you just need to rethink the whole darn thing, but the thinking seems to continue to be the same. You know what I mean? It's just this is the time to get something really innovative done in Mississippi. Be honest with you, right now is a great time because you're seeing people flee some of these high tax. You're seeing people flee California. Now, there may be a lot of people who think, well, we don't want a bunch of Californians around here. But, you know, I mean, we do want to grow our state, and we do want to lift it off of the bottom. And with people leaving high tax states and the overwhelming regulations around COVID, I mean, people are moving. Right now, there's a migration in this country. And Mississippi should be able to capitalize on that. For businesses, we have an incredibly low cost of living. We didn't have an income tax. That would certainly help. We're fairly centrally, for manufacturers, we're pretty centrally located in the country. You know, we're not on one of the coasts, so we've got equal access to a lot of markets in the Southeast. It just feels like there's a real opportunity with Mississippi that we just can't seem to do innovative, unique things enough to capitalize
on. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, we have rails. We have ports. I mean, we are a state set up, and, you know, our number one asset, I think, is our people, too. I mean, we have such a huge amount of brilliant people that have come from Mississippi, you know, and you know, it's a real, you know, the brain drain was the, you know, kind of the big words last year that everybody liked to talk about. I mean, but it's real. We're losing some of our brightest people because they're going to other states. This is another way to keep them here, to let them set up jobs, to let them start working and make Mississippi a powerhouse that I think we could be.
Yeah.
You know, where our culture drives people here. People love coming to Mississippi for the culture, for the Delta. You know, we have a great history of the state, of things that have come from Mississippi. And so now if we could just make it a little more free market friendly, you know, businesses would come here.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it, too. I mean, you know, I don't know how many people I've talked to, and it's not only Mississippi. Sometimes it's even some neighboring states. But you have people who leave California, and they come to Mississippi, and they go house shopping, and they say, oh, my God. You know, they're leaving 1,100 square feet in California, and they come here, and they find out they can afford a 3,500-foot home in a gated neighborhood. Their quality of life just goes through the roof moving to this state. I mean, there's a lot of attractive – there's things we got to get right. We got to fix the schools, some of the schooling system. But anyway, we'll talk about a couple more things. We'll do one more segment. You got time for one more?
Absolutely.
All right, we're talking to Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. One more segment.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we're back. We're talking to Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. So we've gone through. Is anything else you want to talk about on the scorecard or anything like that?
No. Again, I'd encourage anybody that's listening to go out and look at you can go to scorecardms.com, and you can download it there. It's a PDF. It's 14 pages long, but most of that's just an explanation at the very beginning of it. But then what most people are interested in is seeing that score out beside their legislator's name. So Go out there and see it, see what they scored, and if you're happy with it, then call them and congratulate them and thank them for the hard work they're doing. If it's not a score that you're happy with, then call them and let them know.
So your organization, we're going to talk about how to find y'all and what you're about and everything. Your organization's pretty much, I mean, you know, I talk a lot here on the show about the fact I'm a libertarian. I came from Republican Party, became more libertarian, so you're more about small government, individual liberties, that kind of stuff. Do you have Democrat heroes in the legislature here? Are there people who are down with that maybe their district just demands they be a Democrat to win, but they've got some free market, or are they just a lost cause?
So actually, we have, it's funny because some of our lowest scorers are Republicans. And then we didn't have any Democrats that were A's, but we did have several that were that were either high C's or I know we had at least one that was a B, maybe a couple that were B's. So we, we have partners on both sides. I mean, we are truly, I don't just say it because we're a C4 and I have to say it by federal law that we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan.
Yeah.
I mean, we really do work across the aisles on different things. And so, a lot of it, when it comes to individual liberty, believe it or not, we can work with the guys with the D behind their name.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to stuff like hemp. Pseudoephedrine, we were pushing that to try to deregulate it in Mississippi again, allow people to go to the pharmacy and get it made behind the counter, but at least not have to get a prescription for it. So we had Democrats that were really supportive of that.
The Democratic Party used to be pretty big into civil liberties most of my life until the last 4 to 5 years. They feel like they've kind of turned on their civil liberties roots. But anyway,
yeah. So I mean, we do partner with the Democrats a good bit on some bills like that. But like I said, you can go to the scorecard and look, see what you see what you can find out about your legislator, and then again give them a call. I've had several call me already and say they've had mad constituents and want to know why they got a D.
I was just about to ask you that, if they ever look at that and say, hey, why'd you rank me so low?
Yeah, and I said, well, my response to one of them was kind of funny. He's a new guy, wasn't really familiar with who we were, Americans for Prosperity, and because it was kind of such a disconjointed legislative session this year, apparently he didn't see us around the Capitol, but he called and said, I got a D. What am I supposed to tell my constituent? I said, well, we're limited government, individual liberty, lower taxes, kind of organization. I said, so I guess tell him that's not how you voted.
Yeah, right.
How
you campaigned, but you just didn't end up voting that way.
That's right. So, look, if anybody wants to go again, you can go to scorecardms.com to download it from Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, our website there. But follow us on Facebook. We post videos. We post a lot of things. That's kind of one of the easiest ways we can reach our activists is through Facebook. So we have Americans for Prosperity Mississippi Facebook page, and we're on Twitter as well. But follow us there. We have events. We get out of, we're a grassroots organization, so we have events when we can. Hopefully when we get out of this COVID scare, we can actually get back out into the community and start having
community. I got to tell you, this feels like an opportunity where AFP may just say, we're going to have a massive event and just let them come. I mean, at some point, and this is the radical side of me, I do not represent your organization, but at some point, some people need to start getting arrested or something. It's like if they try to take us into another level of lockdown, some groups somewhere, some individuals, some business owners need to just put a line in the sand and just say no.
Sure, yeah. And, we have we work with coalition partners, too. That's, another thing we have to do as an organization is we work with a lot of coalition partners. Some of them are, specific topic-oriented. We're not just one topic-oriented. We look at, kind of all topics when it comes to policy. But I'll give a shout out to Mississippi Center for Public Policy. We work with them a good bit. They're a coalition partner
good.
Of ours, and they have the Mississippi Justice Institute, where they are more than happy to sue the government if they think the government is impeding on your constitutional rights.
Yeah,
and they've done that. So they, they quickly went to represent the church in, where's it, Greenville?
Yeah,
the mayor tried to shut that down. So they were quick to jump into that to help. So there are outside Americans for Prosperity, we have other organizations that you can jump in and help people when they feel like their liberties are being removed from them by the government.
I feel it coming. My spidey sense is tingling around the country that I feel like it's coming again our way. And then if people just want to get involved, or, are you looking for members, or are you just looking for people in the community to get emails, or what? How do you want people to play?
Sure, yeah. So we have a full-time staff. So, it's not just me. We have five members on my staff, and You know, two of our guys are dedicated to grassroots. That means they go out and have lunch with people. They go out and meet with people. So if you're interested, you know, again, go on our Facebook page. Send us a message. We talk to people all the time through our Facebook page. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of us. Message us there and say, hey, I'm interested in the organization. We don't have a membership. You know, it's not, you're not paying us to be involved with us. We're here. We're a nonprofit organization so that we can educate people about the way they can get involved in policy and making Mississippi a better place to live, work, or raise a family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you want to get us, reach us through the Facebook page. That really is the easiest way to get us. We'll have, you know, some of our grassroots staff reach out to you, meet with you. We'll, you know, if we can get back to meeting, you know, in public with community, you know, we go around and, you know, Rotary clubs, you know, civic clubs, things like that, community organizations, churches, you know, we'll go talk with anybody. And again, it, you know, it kind of goes back to our position of we'll work with anybody to do good.
What? How long has AFP been in Mississippi?
We've been here 5 years now. So we're a state chapter of a national organization in 35 states. The national organization has been around for, you know, almost 15 years now, but here in Mississippi for five. So I think most of the seasoned legislators know us and see us working for the people of Mississippi under the dome, and we look forward to getting back. You know, barely 6 weeks from now, when we go into January, we'll be back and we'll start putting things out. You know, look for us, listen for us. We'll have events at the Capitol if we're able to have people out there to educate you and get you plugged in, help us.
Yeah, great. Well, I appreciate it, Stephen. Stephen Utroska with Mississippi chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And I think we'll be talking to you some more coming up in the future, too. But I appreciate the scorecard. Y'all go check it out. Got to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. Enjoyed talking to Stephen from Americans for Prosperity. You know, I cover a lot of national politics. One of the big knocks on talk radio, to be honest with you, and I'm probably as guilty of it as many, is, yeah, you point out all the problems. What are the solutions? And there are groups like Americans for Prosperity that are out there trying to nudge us in the right directions. Mississippi should just be, it should be a blank slate at this point. You know, when you've, and certainly Mississippi has its successes. There's no doubt about it. There's good things that are happening in Mississippi. But, you know, nationally, we've just got a lot of room for improvement. Some of my best times professionally, I got sent to some restaurants when I was a restaurant manager. They were not doing well. I mean, they were operating. They were serving food. And they had, you know, some decent sales numbers from time to time, but there was just so much room. I went to one down in Metairie, Louisiana. It was a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10. I don't think I've ever worked as many hours in my life. Me and another manager got assigned there kind of together. We already knew each other, and within about 9-10 months, we had it up to a 9. And we basically just kind of went in and changed just about everything. We changed personnel. We changed policies. We changed appearance. It's a national chain. We couldn't change the menu, but we changed the procedures to get the menu food out to improve that. There's just, Mississippi has that potential. We've got a great base here. We've got all the tools. We're geographically, we're good. Cost of living's good. People are good. We're friendly people. People that come here from other parts of the country talk about how nice we are. So there's all that potential. And so anyway, as far as solutions go, particularly here for our little state of Mississippi, groups like Americans for Prosperity, we mentioned the Mississippi Center for Public Policy. I'm going to try to get them more involved because there's ways to do it. And in my mind, as a libertarian guy, a real small, limited government, basically as small as we can possibly strangle the thing down to, and then empowering the individual, people would be stunned. And that's what, you know, that's where the power is. The power is in our people. It's not in our government. We don't have to elect better leadership. No, we just need to get them kind of out of the way and do our thing. So anyway, enjoyed having him in. You should check out that scorecard, too. I'm telling you, the accountability for politicians is where we fall down. I believe it's from Trump all the way down. We fall in love with politicians and parties. We sign up dutifully to vote for them each time. We put a sign in the yard. We send a $25 contribution to their campaign, and then we do nothing until the next campaign. We don't pay attention to what they actually do, and when they do something, we justify it. Yeah, we say, well, they had to do this because of this wire, or they couldn't do that. They were never going to, you know. I don't make excuses. Politicians are our employees. We forget that. They have so much power over us. We kind of get in the mode where we're their children. They treat us like children. We have been in a collective nine-month timeout, essentially, by politicians. We are the boss. And so a scorecard is a good way to show that. What AFP has done with the legislative scorecard, it's us judging them. It's kind of nice. I had a couple of the COVID things to do, and I think I'm going to finish the show today by playing some of maybe what Tucker Carlson did last night when it came to, you know, I talked yesterday about the fact I cannot spend 2 hours a day just talking about Nancy Pelosi and Democrats. Number one, I think it's boring. Number two, I don't think it's informative. I don't think there's a lot of Nancy Pelosi fans out there. Even on the left, you don't like Nancy Pelosi. Why am I going to spend 2 hours talking about Nancy Pelosi on the national level? But Tucker Carlson just does it so well, too. And he is a bright spot on Fox. I'm going to talk about Fox a little bit before that, too, because there's some ratings came out, and Fox is apparently not doing so hot. I'll talk a little bit about that and then get that Tucker clip to finish out the show. But I wanted to point out a piece today. We started the show today talking about COVID, the restrictions on there. Now we got the vaccine. It was funny. AstraZeneca came out. They've got some promising. They had a strong immune response to their vaccine. I was talking to a friend the other day. If you want to get rich in today's world, they may not let you work. They may run your restaurant into the ground. They may not let you cut any hair. They may not let you open up your event venue. But if you play the stocks, there's a rotation going on. Here's how the stock pops go. It's Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. So far, that's been the four. They rotate through big positive announcements. Their stocks pop. Eventually, they sell off. You got to catch them early. But AstraZeneca's out with a new promising thing. Their stock popped, of course, on this vaccine news. So I expect Johnson & Johnson. That's just my little tip for me to you. I'm not advising any trading decisions. If you had listened to me on the stock market over the last 6 years, you would have missed out on a great run, because I was telling people in 2014 I thought the market was getting a little expensive. It's sailed for 6 years. But I do feel like Johnson & Johnson, that's my prediction. Maybe tomorrow or Monday morning before the market opens, Johnson & Johnson will tell us they've got one that's 97% effective. You know, we started off at 90. What was it, 90.5 for Pfizer? And then Moderna said, we're 95. And so Pfizer had to come back and go, well, wait, we're 95 too. But this guy named Charles Hughes Smith, he just does a kind of a what I think is an interesting blog piece, but he's featured in a lot of different things. I found this on Zero Hedge. He's got an idea for a vaccine trial that I could get behind. Let me tell you the details of the Pfizer trial. It was interesting. He laid this out. I wasn't really sure. This is the Pfizer trial that said we're at 95% effective rate. I mean, that's huge. You understand the flu vaccine is never anywhere close to that. They tell you they think they've matched it. But then anyway, that was a huge number. It was shocking to me, and I wondered how they got it. So listen to this. In the Pfizer trial, half of the 44,000 volunteers received the vaccine, and the other half got a placebo. Then the researchers waited around to see how many of the volunteers randomly came down with COVID. Pfizer reported that out of 170 cases of COVID, 162 were in the placebo group and 8 were in the vaccine group. So a total of 0.386% of the 44,000 volunteers came down with COVID by means unknown, and this tiny sample is the foundation of a grandiose claims of a 95% effectiveness. This is what the 95% effectiveness, it's based on 0.386% of their entire study that got COVID. So I would say let's not get too excited. But this guy, this Charles Hughes Smith, he just had a fantastic idea about how we should actually test this thing that I could fully get behind. He said, you take 100 politicians, authorities, and big pharma executives, give them 2 doses of vaccine, and then have them serve 4-hour shifts in a crowded ward of severely ill COVID patients for a week without any masks or protective gear. In other words, expose them to sustained, intimate contact with patients with severe cases of COVID, spending hours every day in a soup of virus. And again, this is 100 people, and the 100 people chosen should be politicians, health authorities, and big pharma executives. He goes on to say, if 100 people took the measles vaccine, would they hesitate to expose themselves to measles patients? No. Because the measles vaccine is close to 100% effective. If the politicians and big pharma executives refuse to participate in this trial, that would tell us all we really need to know about the effectiveness of their coronavirus vaccine. I love it. I love it. I'd say put some skin in the game. If you want to inject 330 million Americans with a shot, let's see you put your money where your mouth is. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back on a little bit about Fox News, the exodus from Fox News. I left Fox News 15 years ago for what I think is a more important reason than people are leaving it today. So I'll share that with you, and then we'll listen to Tucker take down Gavin Newsom. It was just a thing of beauty.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment for the day. It's been kind of interesting to watch people turn against Fox News. I've been telling you since I got on this air, Fox News is a Judas goat. But they've been popular until the last few months, and the Trump supporters are not tuning into Fox News, and I think they're feeling it. There was a story out the other day that Morning Joe on MSNBC had beaten Fox and Friends in the morning in the ratings. That's a bad sign for Fox, there's no doubt about it. I just wanted to mention this. I left Fox News about 15 years ago, and this is why I've been pretty routinely bashing them as a network and telling you, they're not some bastion of truth. They always pretend like they talk a lot on Fox News about the mainstream media, somehow inferring that they're not part of it. I left Fox News 15 years ago when I realized that essentially they were tasked to sell conservatives on every war that came down the pike. And I caught on to that. It was about 2005. I'm a little embarrassed. They got me for a few years, got me pretty fired up about the Iraq invasion even. And then I started noticing, this war thing's kind of getting out of control a little bit. Well, Fox News was the one with the big alerts. They keep you constantly. I mean, you look at COVID right now, and a lot of listeners to this show particularly, you understand the hysteria around it. You don't quite understand it. Well, I got to tell you, I felt the same thing about terrorism. But Fox News tried to keep you permanently terrified of a terrorist behind every bush. Pun intended. And so I left Fox News then, better late than never. Now, Fox has got a few bright spots, I'll say still. And if I watch something, I really can't stomach too much of CNN or MSNBC and even the major networks. I could take maybe a 30-minute nightly broadcast, even that's difficult. But if I'm going to watch anything like election returns, I go to Fox because it's more normal, I'll say, not as hysterically left. And they've got a few bright spots. I brought up one a couple of weeks ago, Martha McCallum. She's just gorgeous. That's just all I can say about it. And then I found out she was 57 years old. As a middle-aged man, now I have just what is a full-on crush. Dana Perino, I actually think is good. She was involved in the Bush administration, which I'm no fan of, but Dana Perino's also very attractive. That's what drew me in, but she's kind of normal. But the bright spot at Fox is definitely Tucker Carlson. It's not Sean Hannity, the guy who comes on and tells you he's helping Trump fight the deep state while he wears a CIA lapel pin. The fact people still fall for the Sean Hannity shtick. I guess maybe since Sean Hannity started spray tanning along with Trump, he's got more credibility somehow. To me, it's a little laughable. But anyway, Tucker Carlson really does some good clips, and I've talked about it. I can't hang with Tucker Carlson when it is in the takedown, particularly of the hypocrisy on the left. I will say this, too, though. Just always remember, Tucker Carlson's got a room full of probably five or six writers with him. I don't get that. I'm doing this show without a net. But Tucker Carlson, they do a great job. Writers, Tucker's delivery, he's sane. He makes some very good points. But he took down Gavin Newsom yesterday, and I thought it was something to behold. So I'll share it with you now in case you missed it.
Sometimes a single picture so perfectly crystallizes a moment that you want to hang in a museum as a testament to history. Dorothea Lange's photographs of migrant farm workers from the 1930s were like that. They captured the suffering of the Great Depression more powerfully than any government report ever could. The image of the second flag raising over Iwo Jima was so powerful that we cast it in bronze to commemorate the grit and courage of our Marines in the Second World War. Those images summed up entire periods of American life.
Now, I'm going to admit to you, when I first started hearing him talk about this last night, I watched him live. I saw an image a couple of days ago that I thought perfectly encapsulated 2020 for me. And I kind of wondered if he was catching on to the same thing. Did you see the guy that was, it was a black guy with no shirt standing on top of a city bus. I think it was in New York with a flamethrower. When I saw that, I kind of felt like, well, that kind of encapsulates 2020. It's not every day you see a guy. I think it was during a, you know, some kind of a protest, a Black Lives Matter march or something like that. But the guy was up there with a full-on flamethrower, spraying it into the air and then down onto the street from the top of a city bus. And to me, I just looked at that and went, yeah, that's about 2020.
So what sums up ours? What picture tells our story? Well, tonight we've got it for you. Decades from now, our descendants will look at this one image and know what it was like to live in America in the year 2020. We'll show it to you in just a second. But first, some context. Gavin Newsom is the governor of California, our largest and for a long time our most prosperous state. About 40 million people live in California. So far, two of them under the age of 18 have died of the COVID-19 virus.
Two.
So naturally, Gavin Newsom has shut down the entire state. Businesses are shuttered. People wear masks even as they eat. Large groups are forbidden to congregate. Thanksgiving itself is on its way to being canceled. It's a tough way to live, but Californians have no choice. This is science, people. And Gavin Newsom is California's epidemiologist in chief. He commands obedience, and the serfs obey. With that in mind, the San Francisco Chronicle broke a pretty amazing story this week. Governor Newsom recently attended a birthday dinner up in wine country at the French Laundry. That's one of the best and most expensive restaurants in the world. There were 12 people at Newsom's dinner, and to civilians, that number seemed to be a clear violation of Newsom's own rules.
What?
But as we were told, it really wasn't. It turns out that Newsom was simply celebrating the birthday of a longtime friend of his, a lobbyist, actually, called Jason Kinney. A spokesperson for Kinney described the night this way, quote, "This was a small, intimate 12-person dinner held outdoors with family and a few close friends to celebrate a 50th birthday." In other words, no big deal. For his part, Governor Newsom assured his suffering subjects that, quote, "Our family followed the restaurant's health protocols and took safety precautions." So really, ladies and gentlemen, it was nothing. Just a small, intimate dinner held in nature, under God's blue skies, just a few close friends staying safe and following the protocols to the letter, as mandated by the state that, in fact, they run. So relax, people. No one's getting Rona here. That was the story. Now the photograph. We have the picture thanks to Fox 11 in Los Angeles, one of the rare local stations that still does reporting. It's a picture of the birthday dinner up in Napa. It turns out it was not held outside. It was held in a private room, and not a spacious private room either. All 12 people were packed in tight, shoulder to shoulder, breathing on each other. No social distancing here. Not one of them is wearing a mask. A steam room in central Wuhan could not be more contagious than this dinner. Gavin Newsom's birthday party was a germ factory, and his guests were human petri dishes. But what a guest list it was. Next to Governor Newsom sat the CEO of the California Medical Association, and one over from him, one of the state's top health lobbyists.
What?
Together, the two of them represent tens of thousands of physicians, credentialed men of science and women of science in the state of California. So if you're wondering why, if you live in California, you can't have Thanksgiving this year or visit your mother as she dies alone in the hospital, it is because of them and people like them. And yet there they were, eating $300 truffle pasta and living like this pandemic thing never even happened. The picture of them doing it, known henceforth to history as the French Laundry photograph, is the year 2020 condensed to its essence. Here you have plutocrats dining with lobbyists, ignoring the very orders they're so self-righteously imposing on others, gorging themselves in seclusion as the people they're supposed to be helping wither and die. And then when they're caught, they lie about it. How perfect is that? It's all there, every element. Hypocrisy, greed, selfishness, stupidity. This is our national moment in a single picture. Move over, Dorothea Lange. So what's Gavin Newsom's explanation for this picture? Well, in the interest of equal time and fairness, we're going to show it to you now.
I made a bad mistake. Instead of sitting down, I should have stood up and walked back, got in my car, and drove back to my house. Instead, I chose to sit there with my wife and a number of other couples that were outside.
I'm running out of time. You ought to see the entire Gavin Newsom response to it. Is laughable in his faux apology and justification of what he did. Anyway, knocking the cover off the ball. If you want the link to that Tucker Carlson, or just go find it from last night. He just did a great job on this takedown. Have a fantastic day. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.